Let's go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle.
I want to go odd. 5-51 mirror.
This is Patriots Playbook.
Go stack guts combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
Patriots Playbook. Breaking down last Sunday's game.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the 7 route.
Next Sunday's game.
Be ready for the greats check, too, okay? Because we'll get the bunch on third and short. Even 51 greats. Even 51 greats.
And the rest of the
2007
NFL season.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast read over the top.
And some of the fun stuff in between. Now, here's John Rook on Patriots Playbook.
Come on, let's go, let's go.
Hey, everybody. We welcome you once again inside Patriots Playbook for a Thursday right here on Patriots.com radio. Pats and the Jacksonville Jaguars in the AFC divisional round of the playoffs coming up Saturday night, 8 p.m. Eastern time at Gillette Stadium in Foxborough. Yesterday I told you that we might have an abbreviated show today because everything's getting pushed back a day, and that we might have some Patriots Friday stuff today because of interview availabilities and such. Well, guess what? Through the magic of radio that we try to perform each and every weekday for you here on the Patriots website, they will be able to perform Patriots Friday on Friday. So that means, hey, you get me. What's better than that? A couple of other surprises coming up on the show. Mike Felger from 890 ESPN will join us in a little bit as he wraps up his duties. He's got some story deadlines going on there at the stadium for the Boston Herald, so he's going to give us his 2 cents in the matchup this weekend. We'll also hear the press conference with Patriots linebacker Junior Seau a little bit later on in the program today. Of course, Patriots head coach Bill Belichick, we'll hear from him a little bit later on in the program as well and get you the Thursday news from Gillette. We've also got our microphones, our Patriots playbook microphones in the locker room today. We're gathering interviews almost as we speak, and so we'll get the fresh thoughts from the guys who will actually be out on the field on Saturday night and their thoughts just now one day closer to the possibility of inching closer to the Super Bowl. So that is all coming up for you on the program. And Josh McDaniels, the Patriots offensive coordinator, who over the last couple of weeks has done a weekly get-together with members of the media. And I believe some of it, I'm not sure all of it, but I believe some of it has been streamed here on the website. At any rate, we're going to bring you his news conference that he had with members of the Patriots media from earlier today at Gillette. We're going to bring you that here on the program as well today. Because we know that, hey, some of you, this is appointment listening. There are others of you that don't have time and that you're listening to me now as you've downloaded it later for via podcast just because you're busy or doing things between 2 and 4 Eastern time, and we certainly appreciate that, which is the great thing about podcasts now. You can hear the program basically whenever you want to, whenever you need to, whenever it's convenient for you. So that's why we're here. We're glad you're here with us live because now we're live. You get to participate with us via email. But, hey, if you're listening to us via podcast and something really just gets you and you've got to get the answer out, you can fire off the email anyway. Just make sure that you tell us that you're listening on podcast because sometimes emails automatically get deleted. You know how that goes in the old email inbox. So just make sure you do that, and then we'll hold on to it and we'll read it for an upcoming show. In the meantime, the web address, of course, as you are certainly aware, webradio@patriots.com. Webradio, it's all one word, @patriots.com. That's how you reach us here on the show. Yesterday, I tried to get some thoughts about predictions. I only got a couple. I sense complacency. I sense that most everyone who is within earshot of this particular program right now, of my voice right at this second, is overwhelmingly convinced the Patriots will win and will win going away. Pardon the sniff. Fighting off the lasting effects of a cold from a week ago, as you might recall. Are you really that confident in a Patriots win? I don't know. I have to admit, yesterday we had a great conversation with Vic Ketchum, who covers the Jaguars. He's the senior editor for Jaguars.com. And Vic Ketchman told us in no uncertain terms that he thinks this game basically boils down to one thing. I said it boiled down to two things. He boiled it down even further for me, and as I look at it, what he says certainly has some merit. And this is a guy that has watched every minute of everything the Jaguars have done on the field this year, which is why we certainly wanted to have him on the program, and we had him yesterday. If you missed the conversation, well, then download the podcast. That's all I can tell you. Go to yesterday's show and download it and listen to him. It's quite entertaining, actually. Somebody sent in an email, by the way, yesterday after the
this
show.
This is John Hanna, Patriot Hall of Famer. Download the podcast now.
Thanks, yeah, thank you. Appreciate that, John. See, even John Hanna tells you, you got to download the podcast. Yesterday, the emailer said, ask Vic about the asterisk on the website. And we did, actually. Actually, it didn't even have to ask him. He brought it up during the conversation. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, if you go to Jaguars.com and you look at the power rankings that Vic Ketchman does, he has the Patriots up at the top of the power rankings, but he has a big fat asterisk next to it. Kind of like what the New York, which New York paper was it? Was it the Post or the Daily News that did that? I don't remember. During the season because of the whole cheating thing, the whole Spygate thing. And Ketchman has had the asterisk on his power rankings on Jaguars.com all year. Okay, fine, whatever. And he brought it up yesterday. We didn't even have to ask him the question about the asterisk. And he said, look, you know, as far as the asterisk is concerned, it's all, you know, cannon fodder. It's all a joke. It's all to create controversy. It's all to create viewership and or listenership and or readership to the website. Well, of course it is. Now, you read some of his stuff on the website there and you think, well, maybe this guy really means it. Because he definitely is, he's got conviction behind his words. But the one thing that I, you know, and he kind of gave us a little wink-wink yesterday because simply, you know, he knows the audience that he's speaking to. He knows the audience he's playing to. He knows that he had a Patriots reporter, and he knows that he has Patriots fans listening to him yesterday. I thought he was actually pretty good. And to that end, I'm going to paraphrase a little what he told us yesterday, but boiling the game down to one very simple fact for you on Saturday night. Will the Jaguars be able to run the ball and control the clock? One and the same. If they run the ball, they control the clock. If they don't run the ball, they don't control the clock. That's the one and only real issue in the game. Because if the Jaguars can run the ball and control the clock by virtue of their running the ball, then they'll have a chance to win. Why? Because the ball will be in Tom Brady's hands and the Patriots offense less times. It's that simple. Now, even the Patriots realize that they'll have to work a little bit to have some success on offense. Jacksonville's defense is going to be without Mike Peterson. He's already been ruled out for the game. If you haven't seen that, that's a fait accompli. It's done. In fact, the very latest that I have from the Jags on that is that Mike Peterson is going to miss his eighth consecutive game with a broken right hand. Tackle John Henderson. Safety Reggie Nelson have both missed parts of practice over the last couple of days. Henderson had the hamstring injury in the first quarter Saturday night at Pittsburgh. Nelson injured his thigh in practice last week. He played against the Steelers, but all he's been doing is riding a bike. So their participation, to what extent, we're not sure, but their participation may be doubtful at this time. And I'm sure we'll get an update on the injury report a little bit later on. Marcus Stroud and General Sensabaugh obviously have already been put on injured reserve for the Jaguars as well. So they're thin, and they're thinning out against the Patriots. They were hopeful that they might get Peterson back, but he's just not recovered from the broken right hand enough where they're going to get him back out there. Not going to happen. So the Jaguars are hurt up. They're banged up on defense. But even so, it's still going to take some work of the Patriots. So if you have fewer opportunities to do it, then the pressure is on you primarily to score as often as you can, almost every time you have the ball, if you're not going to have it that much. So I think the thought process here is that if the Jaguars can limit the Patriots' chances, they have a better chance for success simply because the Patriots will have to play near perfect on offense to score. It'll be against a somewhat weakened Jaguars defense, but again, let's give Jacksonville some credit. They're big and strong on the defensive front. They can still penetrate. They can still create some havoc. Did return a pick for a touchdown last week. So, I mean, they're capable. But it's still, you know, none of it makes any difference unless the Jaguars run the ball. If they can't run the ball, then Tom Brady is going to have more time to pick apart the Jacksonville defense. It's that simple. Now, you can throw, as I mentioned yesterday, you can throw into the equation turnovers, which are the great equalizer, especially in the playoffs. They're much more magnified in a playoff situation than it is during the regular season. Field position is a part of that. Big plays, obviously, special teams, it's all a part of it. And yes, any one of those three things, if one of them goes really against you or really for you, it can really be a huge momentum swing and give you some impetus, give you some momentum, give you a chance to carry a little ride right on into the locker room. And when the clock strikes zero, it can take you on into the house, so to speak. But the bread and butter of this is Jackson will run on the ball. If they can, they're in the game. If they run the ball and the Patriots turn the ball over or don't score as often as maybe they should in the fewer times that they have the ball, you can see the Patriots could be in some trouble. If they don't run the ball, that is Jacksonville, if they don't run the ball, then you can see the Patriots having all the time in the world to relax, to execute their game plan. If they don't score on every drive, no big deal. We'll come back. We'll get them next time because our defense is shutting Jacksonville down. They are going to run the ball. And I told Vic Ketchman yesterday, and I've made it very clear all week long, nobody seems to disagree with this premise. First quarter is huge. In fact, maybe the first key play of the game will be the coin toss. Because both teams are going to want the football. The Patriots want to put their will on Jacksonville on Saturday night. They're going to want to score. They're going to want to score quickly, maybe not quite as quickly in the opening drive, but they're going to want to get the jump on Jacksonville. They want the Jaguars to play from behind because they are not as good a team when they're coming from behind. Now, to that end, Vic Ketchman from Jaguars.com said yesterday, he said, well, you know, David Garrard has had a pretty good year. He's one of, what, three, four quarterbacks in the NFL that had a quarterback rating of 100 or better this year. He had a better QB rating than Peyton Manning. Think about that. David Garrard had a better QB rating this year than Peyton, by God, Manning. How about that? It's because he's been incredibly accurate. He hasn't thrown into, you know, coverage mistakes. He has shown some propensity to try to stretch the field, go deep. And I think people have dared him to do that. And I think they've been a little surprised that he's got, you know, the people that can go and get the ball. Now, it wouldn't shock me to see him test Ellis Hobbs or even, you know, have the chutzpah to go get, you know, on the corner against Asante Samuel. Nothing would surprise me here because they're going to be playing with found money. They got nothing to lose. If they lose, well, we were supposed to. So Jacksonville has a tremendous advantage where that's concerned. All the pressure's on the Patriots. There's no doubt about that. So if Jacksonville can get that ball first, and they can impose their will on the Patriots, and they can pound away, and they can get some first downs, and even if they go down the field and score a field goal on that opening drive, maybe they don't get into the end zone, but maybe they get a field goal on that opening drive, then you know what? They've made their statement that we are going to be here, and you are going to have to take it from us. That will give the Patriots a football game. Now, if Jacksonville runs the ball, and then for the first half, and then in the second half, they start turning it over. Maybe they fumble, or maybe they throw a pick or two. Well, then, yeah, you can see the game start to turn. That's the great intrigue about football, and certainly playoff football, because the playoffs can literally turn on the slightest mistake. They can turn on a penalty, kind of like we saw in that Baltimore game in the regular season, you know, the penalty that saved the Patriots on fourth down. That can happen in the playoffs. So you've got to play as clean and perfectly a game as you can, and you hope that the mistakes that you do make are minimized, that they're not magnified, that they don't come back and haunt you. And I guess the thought process is that if you play the running game and you're running to win with the game, that you've got fewer opportunities to make mistakes. You don't have to worry about illegal procedures, generally speaking, if you're running the football. You don't have receivers in motion. You don't have guys jumping off sides. You don't have guys lining up in the neutral zone. I mean, all these things. So if you've got a big, strong offensive line, and you're especially going up against a team that has been somewhat at times susceptible against the run, you're going to play that card. You're going to play that card. So that's what it boils down to. Fact is, can Jacksonville run the ball? Can they keep the ball out of the hands of the Patriots? If they can, yeah, they got a shot. Doesn't mean they'll win it, but they will and should be in the game. If the Patriots defense, and this is the big challenge that faces the Patriots on Saturday night, if the Patriots defense comes up, stuffs Jacksonville, they don't allow Fred Taylor. They don't allow Maurice Jones-Drew any running room per se. They certainly don't allow one of those, what, 70, 75-yarders like he popped a couple of years ago. You know, make sure you complete the tackle, right? Make sure the guy's down on the ground. Don't let him pop back up and go like he did on that, what was that, a 75-yarder 2 years ago? In the game 2 years ago? If they don't allow big gains, you know, if they can allow 3 and 4 yards out of whack and make Jacksonville have to throw it on third down, then I think the Patriots are in decent shape. If they can get Jacksonville into a 3rd and 5 or 6 or longer, I think the Patriots will definitely have the upper hand. Because on 3rd and 5 or 3rd and 6, I don't think you'll see Jacksonville run the ball. So what you want to do is you want to put the Jacksonville offense into as predictable a situation as you possibly can. Because on 3rd and 3, what are they going to do? On 3rd and 4, you've got a reasonable idea of what they could do based on their yards per game, yards per carry average. 3rd and 5, now you're thinking there might be an opportunity to throw it. They might not be as willing to run it. So it's very important. First downs are very important. First down defense will be very important for the Patriots. You don't want to put the Jags in 2nd and short. You don't want to put the Jags in even 3rd and short. You want 2nd and medium range. You want 3rd and long. You want those kind of things. You want the offense that the Jaguars has. You want it predictable. And if you can do that, and you can hold them off the scoreboard, and you could give Brady and company enough time to be able to create a touchdown or two early, then you're going to control things, and then you're going to play with a much higher comfort level. Guys will be more relaxed on the sidelines. Fans will be letting loose in the stands. You put all the pressure on Jacksonville's side of the field, because make no mistake about it. When the game starts, the pressure is all on the home side of the field. Every stinking bit of it. Everybody will be uptight. Everybody will be a little nervous. You'll have the little, you know, pit in the bottom of your stomach because it is the playoffs. It's win or go home. And that's the way it should be. Playoffs should bring that special little something-something. Should make you a little nervous. Because this is for keeps. This is for everything. And Jacksonville right now, as I mentioned earlier, they're playing with found money. First of all, they were the 5 seed, and they beat a higher-seeded team on the road last week. They're playing with found money. They weren't really expected to win, and they did. So in that regard, you need to do something to seize control of the game as quickly as possible. Therefore, your best opportunity to do that is to win the coin flip and take the ball and score, period. You do that, you're right there. You're right where you need to be. And if you don't win the coin flip, then you need to shut them down. It's that simple. But if Jacksonville can do something with that ball on that opening drive, if they win the coin flip, the Patriots are going to have their hands full. The Patriots will have their hands full. So what do you think of those scenarios? Agree? Disagree? Normally on Thursdays, we ask for your predictions, your game predictions. And like I said, off the top, I'm a little surprised at the complacency, quite frankly, Patriots Nation. I'm very surprised at the complacency. Everybody seems to think it's going to be a win and a walkover. This is the playoffs, kids. This is the NFL playoffs. Nothing comes easy. You may think it will, just by virtue of 16-0 in the regular season. Don't you know that these guys down the hallway, don't you know that they've got all the pressure on their shoulders now? This is not going to be as easy as you think it will be. The playoffs never are. And maybe you've had to suit up and get out on the field of your choice to know that. It's not easy. So I'd like to hear what you think about the course of the ball game, whether or not you agree or disagree with the run issue of the Jaguars as being the primary issue in this game. And what's your prediction? What do you think will happen? Give me a score. Step out. Take a chance. Get off the fence. You know the old saying about sitting on the fence, right? It's not a good thing because you can get hit from both sides. So take a stand. Get on one side of the fence. Make a pick and tell me why. It's that simple. There's no right or wrong answer where it's concerned. I'm interested in your opinion. That's why we do this here. I want to know what you're thinking. I want to know what you're feeling. If you have questions about it, I'll do the best I can to answer them for you, or we'll get the answer for you here. That's why we're here. This is what we do. We talk football. You know, we try to build up certainly a little hype for the game. Absolutely. Why not? It's what it's all about. It's fun. It's great to do. There are a lot of people that, you know, are longtime fans. I realize there are many of you who are listening from outside of the New England area that can't get your Patriots fix in your local media, wherever you're located, and so you come here to get it. Well, that's why we're here. But we need to hear from you. Webradio at patriots.com. That's how you reach us on the show. Send us the emails, and we'll get moving along. A couple of other issues about the game. I think that, in particular, the Patriots, because their ability to stop the run that Jacksonville presents, it certainly is problem one. But the Patriots running game, while it has been a subject of conversation for us here on the show over the last, oh, I don't know, 16 weeks, seems like something about the Patriots running game comes up every week, whether or not you're happy with it, you're upset with it, you think it's progressing, you think it's regressed. I've been banging on Lawrence Maroney pretty much all year long. I have to admit, you know, late in the year, he certainly seemed to do a very good job. When given the opportunity, he rose to the front. I still have questions about his health and durability and whether or not he'll be that big back, every down back. Now, the Patriots certainly were most beneficial to have when Corey Dillon did that, and even when Antoine Smith was in his heyday, guy that could go between the tackles and do that. And I'm not convinced still that Maroney is durable enough to be able to be that kind of guy. And maybe he'll still be a longtime Patriot. My guess is that Lawrence Maroney becomes a longtime Patriot if he gets help, if he has a 1-2 tandem, someone to share the load with, like a, oh, I don't know, Sammy Morris. Or somebody else. But that's all. He did come up when he needed to, and you got to give him credit, even though we've been kind of banging against him most of the year. But the Patriots running game, when you look at it statistically, hasn't been that bad. I think we talked about this toward the end of the regular season, maybe 3 or 4 weeks toward the end of the year. So it's probably been about a month or so ago since we really initially brought this up, is what I'm guessing. But the Patriots averaged 4.1 yards per rush this past season. Now, I don't know if that sounds good or bad, or you don't really know what that sounds like, but 4.1 yards per rush, first of all, look at the obvious. If you get 4.1 per rush, then every third carry you're going to get a first down, right? You need 10 yards to get the first down. And you realize in practicality it doesn't work that way, but average it out. Anytime you can rush the ball three times and get a first down, you are doing your job. That's what you're supposed to be doing. You're an efficient running, rushing offense. This 4.1 per rush in 2007 was the highest average for the Patriots running game in 22 seasons. 22 years since 85, since the AFC Championship, since Super Bowl 20. That's the last time they averaged 4.1 per rush. Now, there have been some very good individual seasons since that time. Dillon's, Robert Edwards, Curtis Martin. You know, some very good backs who have run for great years. But the team average had not been that high. 4.1 per carry is the highest since 1985. Now, since that time, they've only had one other season in which there were 4 yards per rush. And that was 3 years ago. Corey had his big year. The Patriots' average carry or average yards per rush was 4.07. So they got close. Just a little over, a fraction over 4 yards per carry. But 95, 3.94. Last year, 3.95. 2001 and 2002 seasons, 3.79 and 3.82. So, I mean, nothing else has really come close since that point in time. So, I think you have to give the Patriots some credit here, and maybe you give most of the credit to the offensive line where you've got three Pro Bowlers, that whole left side of the line between Copen and Mankins and Light, and, of course, the All-Pro team being named yesterday, if you hadn't heard, and I'm sure most of you have by now, if you frequent NFL.com or certainly Patriots.com and ESPN and all the other websites that gave Matt Light an All-Pro honor and gave Mankins and Copen second-team All-Pro honors, and they're all deserved. I mean, when you protect the quarterback the way you do and you lead the rushing game the way you have, as I just mentioned, statistically, best season in 22 years in average rush by the Patriots, then why shouldn't most of your offensive line be in the Pro Bowl or be considered All-Pro? That's getting the job done. That is getting the job done. The Patriots' three highest rushing averages since 1985 have come in the last four seasons. They had 17 rushing touchdowns this year. Yes, Tom Brady threw 50 touchdown passes. 17 rushing touchdowns, and that's their second highest total in the last 20 years. That trails only the 20 rushing touchdowns they had last year. Of course, the Patriots scored 75 touchdowns this year, which set the NFL record. It passed their old team record of 52 touchdowns by 23 scores. Can you believe that? 23 more touchdowns this year than the Patriots had ever scored in a previous season. The old NFL record was 70, as we've talked about several times during the year, set by the 98 Vikings. 23, in fact, the ironic thing about the touchdown record, read this in the notes this week. As a team, believe it or not, the Patriots have scored 23 or fewer touchdowns in an entire season four times in their history. All of 1990, they scored 19 touchdowns the whole stinking year. 91, 22 touchdowns the whole stinking year. Of course, we were talking about some really lean years back then. But they scored fewer touchdowns in those years than the Patriots scored over their previous high record. That just shows you the absolute explosiveness of this offense. And it has been a tremendous year. But I wanted to bring up the rushing totals because the rushing game has certainly been taking its fair share of whacks. And whether you agree or disagree with that, fact is that the Patriots' rushing game is maligned a little bit. And I just wanted to make sure that we set the record straight where that's concerned. And I've been right there. I'm banging on the running game with you for a couple of different reasons, but nevertheless criticizing it, that it could be better. But when you throw the football with such accuracy, such precision, and with such devastating results, I guess you can make the argument, well, who needs the run game? And I guess that's really the point of this whole Patriots offense. But the run game, though, has not been as bad as the public perception might be. Let me give you another thing that I think that is not as perceived as well in the public eye or in the public's mind. Patriots are not perceived to be an overwhelming defense, okay? Even though they finished still fourth in the league, I believe, in points allowed this year. It's still a little behind statistically where they were a year ago in terms of points allowed. We know that they set the franchise record last season. Patriots in total yards still allowed under 300 yards per game in total offense. Again, great. Super job. Very tough. That is a playoff caliber, Super Bowl worthy defense. If you go by previous numbers and previous championship teams, the Patriots are not in the class. Let's say they're not in the class of last year's Colts, because the Colts defense, we all know, was horrific going into the playoffs, and then they turned in an unbelievable three-game stretch to end up becoming Super Bowl champs. So you have to give the Colts credit. They came to play on defense last year when they had to. And now this year, they've taken the momentum from that year, and statistically speaking, it has been one of the best years the Colts have ever had on defense. They led the NFL in scoring defense. Led the league in scoring defense. Talked about that yesterday with Russell Baxter from ESPN. So the Patriots' numbers may not quite be as close statistically as they were even a year ago, but they're also still a little deceiving. They're still plenty impressive. First of all, Patriots had 47 sacks this past season in 2007. 47. Did you know that that led the AFC? I'm not sure many of you did know that. Be honest with yourselves now. Did you really know that? Because I wasn't aware of that until I read it this week. I said, I knew that they had, you know, 40 plus somewhere in there, and they were up in the top probably three or four, but I wasn't sure that it was, you know, on top of the AFC. It's also number two overall in the NFL. And we made a big deal perhaps a couple of weeks ago with the fact that the Giants were number one in the NFL as they had 53 sacks during the year. But nobody mentioned the fact that the Patriots were second behind the Giants with 47 sacks. Ahead of Dallas, ahead of Seattle, ahead of San Diego. Vaunted San Diego and their pressure defense. Patriots had more sacks than they did. The 47 sacks, the highest total for the Patriots in 21 years. Dating back to 48 sacks recorded by the 1986 team. In fact, their previous highest sack total this decade was achieved by the 2004 Super Bowl team when they had 45 sacks. So again, just reference points for you. Reference points. Perception. Perception is everything, as we know in this business, and I think the perception has been inaccurate. Of this Patriots team overall. You know, it's like the whole, you know, we banged against Jeremy Green yesterday a little bit on the show. We banged against him and mentioned it to Russell Baxter at ESPN and such because he, on ESPN.com, is sticking with his selection that he made a few weeks ago, and he's sticking by it this week of Jacksonville winning the game on Saturday. That's fine. Everybody's entitled to their opinion, right? But, you know, for a guy who works for Scouts, Inc., all right, he's like their pro director here. And for a guy that's, you know, probably looks at as many different game films and watches as much football as this guy does, not to mention his pedigree being Dennis Green's son, I can't believe he's missing these things that I'm bringing to you right now. He says that the Patriots 16-0 record wasn't all that impressive. What was not impressive about it? The fact that they beat, what, six other playoff teams along the way? Well, you know, the fact that they led the AFC with sacks, the fact that they outscored their previous touchdown record by 23, the fact that the average rush per team was the highest in 22 seasons? Come on. What else do you need here? Now, I'm not saying Jeremy Green is completely false, completely wrong, and off his rocker for thinking the Jaguars are going to win. He is obviously banking on the fact that the Jaguars will be able to run the football. They're not going to beat the football by they're not going to beat the Patriots by throwing the football. Not going to do it. Although, I was just thinking of this morning. How about this for a switcheroo? No doubt, to try to stop the run. Jacksonville comes out and wings it. How about that? Would that work for you? Catch the Patriots off guard a little bit? See, that's what adds to the intrigue of the game overall, you know? I mean, that's what... You know, we all have to, that's why they got to play the game. We don't really know what's going to happen. We can surmise, we can take guesses. You know, it's always great to kind of add to the mix here and see how the intrigue takes, you know, takes us through the day. But, you know, don't be surprised to see Jacksonville take a couple of shots over the top. Simply because, you just don't know. Catch somebody by surprise. Catch them off guard. Do something a little bit different. Gary, were you talking to me? I'm sorry.
Yeah, we're going to hear from Josh McDaniels.
Nice. Shall we do that now?
Indeed.
Okay. So let's talk about this Patriots offense. Let's talk about the Patriots running game in particular. Let's talk about how the Patriots are looking at attacking this very Jacksonville defense, provided, of course, they have the ball enough, huh? Back to the original premise anyway. Earlier today, Patriots offensive coordinator Josh McDaniels meeting with members of the Patriots media.
Great crowd today.
Yep. You know, I'd always said that if that opportunity presented itself, that I'd make, you know, take all the information that I had at hand and try to make the best decision for me personally and professionally and my family, keeping them first and foremost, you know, in my mind relative to moving on at any point in my career. And I was grateful for the opportunity that those teams gave me. But at this time, that's the best thing for me is to be here and focus my preparation or my efforts on this preparation for the playoff run here. And that's really simple as that, and that's all that went into it, and I'm going to be here in New England.
Different, do you just weigh the idea of going through the experience for the future, even if you knew that it wasn't the right time now, just to go through that, that experience might help you in the future?
It could, you know, and I think Bill said it best earlier this week. It could hurt you or it could help you. You know, every experience has could have a positive, could have a negative to it. And I'm, you know, again, I'm not really worried or concerned about what that experience may or may not have afforded me going forward in my career. And you know, when I cry, and if that ever comes up again, and the time is right for me to do that, then, you know, we'll cross that bridge when it comes to it. But I'm not really worried about whether it hurt me or helped me or what I could have gained from it or what I didn't gain from it. I'm just really focused right now on the playoffs.
Do you think you're ready to be a head coach in the NFL?
I've said this before. That's for somebody else to choose. If that time ever comes up and that's ever presented again to me, and I feel like it's the right opportunity for me to try to attempt to do that, then we'll do it. But, you know, again, I said it in the statement, and grateful for the opportunity they presented me. But at this time, I'm going to be a Patriot, and I'm looking forward to it.
Josh, this is not a Tom Brady question per se, but during the summer, if you were sitting around with a couple of your football buddies, and you were talking about quarterbacks, and somebody said, hey, it's going to be possible for a quarterback someday to get the numbers that Tom has. Just in a general sense, would you have said it's possible for a quarterback to have the kind of season that he's had in general? Anybody to get those kind of numbers?
It's hard to say, you know, what another quarterback's going to do in another season. I know he's had a special season relative to the way he's performed and the way he's played. And, you know, to project whether he would have done that or somebody else, for that matter, would have done it, I don't know. But there's a lot of records and there's a lot of numbers that people I know put out there and say, boy, I don't know if there's ever going to be another guy that gets close to it. But somebody, you know, I know Peyton threw 49 and Tommy just so happened to throw 50, you know. And I'm sure somebody else will come along and approach that number again and, you know, and give that a run and see what happens. But I think if you're playing a good team and you have a good season and you prepare hard and you work hard and you have good people around you and you're on a good, you know, like I said, a good organization with a good winning team, then you have an opportunity to do things like that. And Tommy had a great year. There's no question about it.
Josh, what is it, as far as safeties go, what do you see in Jacksonville safeties? And
We played against Sammy Knight before, and he's a very instinctive player. He's a veteran guy who you can tell he watches a lot of film and understands what teams are trying to do against them. He's a very smart player. Reggie Nelson is an exceptional athlete, covers a lot of ground, has made a lot of big plays for him this year. You can't be lazy around either one of them. You know, you can't take your eyes off of them, or you can't throw the ball and not know where they are because they'll make plays on you. And they'll have the ball going the other way. They're big play defense, and those two are a big part of the reason why, because they, you know, they're aggressive in the run. They'll get down there and they'll hit you and they'll make plays in the running game, but they also take away plenty in the passing game in the deep part of the field. And again, like I said, if you're not careful with them, then they'll end up with the football. And I think that that's something that you're going to have to keep in mind on every play, you know, the entire four quarters with those two.
Thinking back a few months, would you have been surprised at all by what Randy Moss has been able to accomplish?
You know, from the time we got Randy, you know, he showed how hard he was willing to work, and he's been a great leader and a great teammate and a great guy for us to coach. And, you know, when you have ability like Randy has, and then you tie that in with how hard he works to try to go ahead and be the best player he can be and really help our team in any way, shape, or form he can, I don't really think the numbers are that big of a thing for him. I think he wants to win, and I think that shows every day when we come into work. And to look at his skill level and to say that I'd be surprised at what he's done with how hard he works, I wouldn't say that. I think he's capable of big things, and he's obviously shown that this year. And with the way he works and the way he approaches the game, it doesn't surprise me.
What was your focus offensively during the bye week? What did that help you do?
We did a lot of things during the bye week and really tried to actually hit a lot of most areas of our offense. We tried to work on and tried to take a look at the last half of the season and anything that we could do better or things that we might want to go ahead and tweak going into the playoffs. You know, you always have an opportunity to do that when you have a bye week. And we kind of took the same approach that we did, you know, when we had the bye week in the middle of the season, really focused on ourselves and, you know, covered a lot of ground, worked in the red zone goal line, third down, against blitz pickup, in a running game, and tried to hit as much of it as we possibly could. And we had two good days last week, and hopefully that will help us here going forward into the playoffs.
When teams have gone three wide or four wide against Jacksonville, how have they generally defended it? Do they play much six defensive backs, or is it pretty standard with just the one Cousin coming on?
Yeah, I would say that they're a nickel team with Terry Cousins coming in. They've shown some dime, you know, not a whole lot of it. But I would say this, not a lot of teams have really put that four wide or anything like that out there against them. And so it just so happens that they've been in a lot more nickel than anything else. So I know they got a good secondary. Those other players, Starks and Glenn, and those, they have all played, and we've seen them and we've watched them play and do good things. So it wouldn't surprise me to see them put the dime in the game. But if, you know, if it just was nickel, then that's probably, you know, what they've played the most of and what they feel most comfortable in. And that's what we would anticipate putting out there against us when we're in any kind of three receiver grouping.
How much does it help you as an offensive coordinator to have the depth on the offensive line that you do, that goes out, Ryan, come in, it doesn't seem like you lose very much?
Yeah, it's been that's been a big help. I think you know, Dante does a great job. He's does an exceptional job at coaching that group of guys, and I know he doesn't treat you know, the starters any differently than he does the guys that are getting ready to play if one of those happen to go down. And we've been fortunate that we've had some guys go in there and play well and stand up to the challenge. And I think it's definitely a big plus when you can have guys step in there like that, because then you don't have to change as much of what you want to do as if you felt differently about that group. So, you know, to be able to say we have depth there and put those guys in there and, you know, and let them play and not have to change or adjust too much of what we're doing, I think that's the biggest advantage it gives us. And like I said, it comes back to Dante, and he does a great job coaching that group.
What's the biggest challenge for that offensive line group facing the size of the Jags defensive line?
They're really physical. They're aggressive. I know they create a lot of issues with just a four-man rush, because they never ever stop coming. You know, it's a great team as far as hustling and making hustle plays, is what we kind of call them. You know, where you may have them blocked initially, but you have to block them until the play's completed, or else they're going to get to the quarterback, or they're going to get in the backfield and create a problem in the running game. So I think finishing plays overall, getting on your assignment early, but then again, continuing until the whistle blows, I think that's a big thing for them. That's where they create a lot of their negative plays, and it's probably the biggest, you know, challenge that we're going to face up front, is not only being physical and matching their aggressiveness, but also finishing every play like they do.
Talk about the impact of the spread offense at the college level and how much more impact it might have at the NFL level, positive or negative.
You know, the spread offense in college seems to be different. So different because the quarterback is such a running threat in college. You know, and I'm not an expert in the spread offense as far as college football is concerned, but I know when you see it, you see a lot of quarterbacks that are mobile and able to run, and they use that guy as the primary runner sometimes, which to me it's an advantage. Unless you put another guy down there in the box, you'll always have enough to block whomever they have down there close to the line of scrimmage, which when you're handing the ball to the back, a lot of times you don't have the same numbers advantage because the quarterback's not a blocker. But a lot of times in college football, they use that running back or that halfback, whoever's back there, as the next blocker to handle that safety who's coming down in the box. And then the quarterback's the runner, and there's really no guy for him except the guy standing back there in the middle of the field. And, you know, that guy obviously is not going to make the tackle close to the line of scrimmage.
What kind of impact are you seeing that?
Well, I don't know if there's really it's a different type of game there. And as far as the players, I don't know, is that what you're asking about the players are concerned? Yeah, I don't think there's much of a, we don't end up seeing, you know, a lot of similarities between college spread and the type of offenses you see in the NFL because of the lack of runner, you know, at that position. So I would say it's the quarterback position.
final question?
Josh, focus has been a buzzword this year for you guys. In terms of your turning down those job interviews, did you think in any way that by going and interviewing, you would set a bad example for the team? Did that enter in your thought?
I really wasn't concerned with that. I mean, I obviously want to do what's great and best for this football team at this point in time, but just the overall decision was simple. You know, the best thing for me is to be a Patriot and to continue in my role here and do what I've been doing and prepare hard for the playoffs and worry about that stuff at a later time if it comes back up again. It was really that simple. I love my job here right now. I learned a tremendous amount at John Carroll. I mean, the people that I worked with and that coached me there did a great job of running that program there. And I know that they've had some successful people come into the National Football League as far as, you know, coaches are concerned, and obviously Don Shula is the most noted of those guys. But there's a lot of people in the league that have kind of a background from there, and they kind of keep in close contact with one another. I know them. I know most of the guys that are still in the league, Chuck Prefer and Greg Roman and some other guys that are in the league that do a good job. And so it's kind of a little fraternity, and we take a lot of pride in coming from a smaller school and being able to come into something like the National Football League and try to make a success story out of ourselves. And then in hindsight, you know, hopefully keep John Carroll, you know, in the light. It's a little click we have, so it's kind of fun. But, you know, I owe a lot to it. I had a great education there, and, you know, obviously springboards you into whatever career you're going to go into, and I've chosen this one. It's a good one.
I did not.
I've met him, though, before, but I didn't meet him when I was in college.
All right.
Thank you.
All right, some insight there from Josh McDaniels, Patriots offense coordinator. I think he's very honest. He's very forthcoming. He's obviously a very smart young man. He has learned his lessons well. Maybe the smartest move that he has made, and again, this is just my opinion here, but I think the smartest move he's made is to know that, hey, I'm still young. I've still got a lot I can learn. And it's really not for me to say if I'm ready to go to the NFL as a head coach. That's for somebody else to say. But right now, he knows that there is more that he can still accomplish. And who wouldn't want to still be a part of what's going on?
We'll do it. Look forward to visiting tomorrow.
England. I mean, this he has to know that if he's a part of engineering the offense on what could end up becoming the greatest team of all time in NFL history, don't you think he knows that he'll be able to write his ticket soon enough? I mean, they'll be beating down his door. He'll have to get himself an agent. He'll have to fend off the offers. I mean, because, you know, everybody wants a slice of immortality. Everybody wants a piece of the Patriots way. That's what's happened with Charlie Weiss and Romeo Crennel and even some of the players that have come and gone over the last few years here. He'll have his chance. And I think we're lucky to have him for the time that we have him here. It's obvious that he's got a great understanding of the game. He's got a very good mind. He's imaginative on offense. He's sound. You know, there's not a whole lot of risk involved, although, you know, we could say something about some of those double and triple coverage throws, but he did have Randy Moss out there this year. You know, so, I mean, he sounds a heck of a lot older and a heck of a lot wiser, and maybe the word here I'm looking for is mature. Maybe he's just a heck of a lot more mature than 31 years of age might indicate. Sounds pretty young to me and maybe even to you. But he's a wise 31, and he's learned his lessons well. And the best lesson that he's learned is that he realizes he still has lessons to learn. Says something about him, right? All right, so we'll take all the good stuff as we can get it. Wanted you to know that I have checked up while we were listening to Josh's news conference from earlier today at Gillette. Checked up on the latest weather forecast for Saturday night. And funny how the exact breakdown of the hourly details are not available right now. Maybe it's just because they've overloaded the system. Everybody wants to know. But the anticipated high temperature Saturday afternoon in Foxborough is 45 degrees. That's what they're anticipating it. Around kickoff, about kickoff. It should be upper 30s. 38 to 40, somewhere in that vicinity. That's what they're looking at. There is a 10% chance of some precipitation. Don't know if that means rain or sleet or drizzle or whatever, but there's a 10%. They've kept a 10% chance of precipitation in the forecast for Saturday night. And a game time temperature somewhere in the upper 30s to 40. So that's what we're looking at for Saturday night. The wind below 10 miles per hour, out of the west largely, maybe the northwest, shifting to the northwest, but still under 10 miles per hour. So very little wind at all, if any. And to me, that's, you know, the rain and the wind are what could combine to, you know, help Jacksonville's cause even more on Saturday night. And I just don't, you know, it doesn't look like the weather's going to cooperate, for at least for Jacksonville. So this should be what we would think to be considered optimum operating conditions for a precision offense like the Patriots have. No doubt about it. All right, so I thought I'd just bring you that little bit of an update and that little bit of news. Let's pause here for a timeout. We've got a lot still to cut to work here on in the Patriots playbook for Thursday. Some locker room interviews, Bill Belichick, Junior Seau, much more coming. Hey, and listen, don't forget those emails, okay? Get up, do something, do a little typing. You know, I mean, I'm beginning to think that you're complacent about this now, and I'm a lot disappointed. Shame on you. Come on, let's hear what you have to say about this game. Step out and predict it. Even if it's a Patriots win, I'd still like to know whether or not you think the analysis is on, or are you thinking something else based over what we brought you over the last couple of days here. Webradio at Patriots.com. Come on, let's hear from you. We'll get to some of that coming up right here inside the playbook.
When you've got a lineman-size hunger and want the awesome, authentic taste of Gillette Stadium at your tailgate or right at home, tackle that appetite with Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Try Sac Attack sausages, first down franks, or Patriots brats in a wide variety of flavors at home, at the stadium, or at the game. And get your crowd cheering for Gridiron Grillers. They're great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are all you'll need for the perfect tailgate or home barbecue. Check out all of the Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Mild and hot Sac Attack sausages, Patriots cheese brats and beer brats, first down franks and more. Patriots Gridiron Grillers go great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are available at Big Y, Demoulas Market Basket, Hannaford, Johnny's Foodmaster, Roach Brothers Sudbury Farm, Shaw's and Stop and Shop, and distributed by Agar, Associated Grocers of Maine and Associate Grocers of New England and CMS Wholesale. Patriots Gridiron Grillers, when you just can't wait for Sunday.
All right, Jimmy, it's the big day, and we gotta go. Patriots kick off in an hour. Let's make sure we got everything.
All right, let's see. Face paint.
Check.
Helmets.
Check.
Foam fingers.
Check.
Jerseys.
Check.
Checks.
Check.
Check card.
Check.
That's everything.
Yeah, let's go, Pats! Woo! Let's go, Pats! Let's go, Pats! Let's go!
Check, check, check. That's right. If you really are a true Patriots fan, then you need to open a New England Patriots checking account from Bank of America today. You'll get checks, check cards, and even bank statements, all with the official New England Patriots logo. Bank of America is the official bank of the New England Patriots. So take advantage of this opportunity to make every day game day.
Let's go, Pats! Woo!
And sign up for a New England Patriots checking account today. Bank of America. Bank of Opportunity.
Bank of America N.A. Member FDIC. New England Patriots trademarks, including the Patriots logo, are the property of New England Patriots L.P. and are used pursuant to a licensing agreement with New England Patriots L.P. 2007 Bank of America Corporation. All rights reserved.
He's been a three-time champion, two-time Super Bowl MVP, and kicked off 2007 on a record pace.
Three touchdown passes in the first half.
Now Tom Brady has signed official Patriots mini replica helmets, and you can get one free. Exclusively from the New England Patriots, this authentic mini helmet comes complete with chin strap, face mask, and Tom Brady's autograph. Perfect for every Patriots fan. To take advantage of this incredible one-of-a-kind offer, all you need to do is make qualifying transactions on your Bank of America Patriots Extra Points Visa card. Plus, with your card, you'll earn Patriots Extra Points redeemable for once-in-a-lifetime Patriots experiences, pregame field passes, memorabilia, merchandise, tickets, and much more. Don't wait. Apply at PatriotsExtraPoints.com or call 1-800-NFL-9929 to get your Bank of America
America Patriots Extra Points Visa card and a free official mini replica helmet autographed by Tom Brady. Patriots Extra Points, because fans want contact too. Autographed mini helmet limited to those making a qualifying purchase. See details at PatriotsExtraPoints.com.
Let's go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle.
This is Patriots Playbook.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the seven route.
Patriots Playbook, breaking down last Sunday's game.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast read over the top.
Next Sunday's game.
Want to go odd. 5. Patriots Playbook. 51 mirror.
And the rest of the 2007 NFL season.
Stack Guts Combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
And some of the fun stuff in between.
Even. 51 grapes. Even. 51 grapes.
And now... he's John Rook.
Come on, let's go, let's go.
Okay. Welcome, everybody, inside Patriots Playbook. Yet again, it's hour number two of our Thursday program here on Patriots.com Radio. I'm John Rook, and yep, we're still counting it down to kickoff between the Patriots and the Jacksonville Jaguars coming up Saturday night, 8 o'clock Eastern Time at Gillette Stadium in Foxborough. Still need to hear from you. Webradio at Patriots.com. Now, I do have a couple of emails we'll get to here in a couple of moments. Mike Felger from the Boston Herald and 890 ESPN in Boston is going to join us for a bit in this hour as well, get some of his thoughts. Of course, he'll have his Patriots Friday programming for you here at about the same time tomorrow on Patriots.com. And the Patriots Football Network, of course. And then, of course, we'll kick this thing off on Saturday night, and there won't be any time for talk. It'll be all what we do on the field, right? So that's all coming up in this hour. We also will hear from Patriots head coach Bill Belichick before the program is completed today. Let's get a couple of emails in here that have just trickled into the inbox as it now stands. A couple of these may be from earlier, so I apologize if they're repeats. But this one, a couple of them look pretty good here, so I'll go ahead and get it out here. This one comes from Joel, actually, in Merrimack, New Hampshire, who says, how much of an impact do you think the return of Harrison will make? He's been out for quite a while, but is he like Moss in that he can just basically pick up where he left off? Talking about Marvin Harrison of the Indianapolis Colts here. Well, I think anytime you bring back an all-pro caliber, certainly an all-pro caliber receiver that Marvin Harrison is, they're not going to put him back on the field unless he's capable of competing at that level. I mean, I don't know that they bring a Marvin Harrison back if he's only 50, 60, 70% of his total ability. He's been out for a number of weeks now, so my guess is that he's probably been at that 60, 70, 80% level. And so he's probably as close to 100% now as he may ever get this year without just hanging it up for the rest of the season. So in that regard, my guess is he'll make a pretty good impact. He gives Manning another target. In fact, he gives him another great target, doesn't he? So yeah, I think he can make a very good impact. Is he like Moss? I don't know. I don't think so. I don't think he has quite the same physical attributes as Randy Moss, but, you know, in that he can just basically pick up where he left off. In that regard, yeah, I'd buy that to an extent. He also says, how much of a difference do you think the absence of Freeney will make for the Colts' defense? Seems that the greatness of their defense was dependent on being able to get to the quarterback with a four-man rush, and I don't think they can put as much pressure on Brady without Freeney. Obviously, clearly Joel's looking a little bit ahead this week. I would actually agree with that assessment. I don't think they can put quite as much pressure on Brady without Freeney. They did have him, obviously, in the game in the regular season, and that's where he got hurt. So certainly going to help, but it is not going to leave them incapable because, as I mentioned, the Colts, you know, were not the leading scoring defense in the league when they met the Patriots in the regular season, and they are now. So somewhere, somehow they improved, and Bob Sanders was named, NFL Defensive Player of the Year. It's a good team. Good team. And then three, he says, do you think that Bill Belichick is going to concede the run to Indy and play a lot of nickel and dime packages like he did in that first game? I think maybe that someone here is a little complacent. Yeah, I think Joel and Merrimack is already looking forward. Joel, it may very well happen, and I've entertained your questions overall, but can we really hold the Indy talk till next week? Is that possible? I mean, can we have, let's pay the respect that you want, and you want Jacksonville to give you, and let's pay them the same respect in return. And I don't mind hitting one or two of these little things, but, let's in the game plan for Indianapolis, no, that's not what we're into right now. Still got a game against Jacksonville that we have to play on Saturday. But I will definitely entertain that question next week if you want to bring it back, all right? Chris in Raleigh, North Carolina says, what do you guys think of Vrabel over his career? He never got much attention,
But I remember before he went inside, he was all over the field a few years ago. Now that he's back outside, he stepped it back up again. I put him in the elite class. Heck, I have his jersey, but I was curious what you guys thought of him over the years. That's a good question. You know, Vrabel was, I think, if you know something about his career at all, he was pretty much an afterthought. He when he was at Pittsburgh, he was a guy that it was sort of a tweener, and yet, you know, he was thought of as maybe an outside rush guy. He was one of those, you know, defensive end type players when he was at Ohio State, undersized linemen. The Patriots were able to convert, you know, guys like, you know, McGinnis and Bruschi. And so I think they, because of the success they had with players like that, that's why they liked Vrabel and they went out and got him and they saw the same thing. And he was playing behind some pretty good linebackers in Pittsburgh. There just wasn't an opportunity. I mean, who do you take out? If you put Vrabel in, who do you take out on that team? You know, when he just had come from Ohio State. The answer is, well, nobody. So in that regard, I mean, you can understand why he might have been caught in the numbers game there. They did play him some inside, and I think it's benefited his career. I think it's not only, A, made him a better outside player now, but, B, he's learned every facet of what it takes to be a linebacker, especially in this particular system. And you know as well as anyone probably, Chris, that that's something the Patriots demand of all of their players. They want you to learn multiple positions. They want to be able to use interchangeable parts, number one, to help with depth and if injuries do occur, but number two, because they want you to know what's going on. They want you to be a thinking football player. They want you to know what's happening in other facets of the field. They want you to understand what responsibilities you might have depending upon where you are on the field, because they feel like if you understand it all with a better concept of everything, then you're going to have more of an opportunity to perform and perform well. Just the way they've always looked at it. And I think Mike Vrabel has slowly developed into an outstanding, obviously Pro Bowl caliber football player. Gary from Syracuse says, first off, Patriots 31, Jags 10. Second, if the Pats win out, who do you think will retire? And are there any free agents or draft picks that you'd like to replace them? Ooh, you know what? That's actually, believe it or not, Gary, that's the first question that I've had like that this year. I really thought I might hear this question beforehand. I'll be honest, I haven't given it a tremendous amount of thought. I think Troy Brown would be the obvious one. I'm trying to think right off the top of my head if there might be somebody else that steps aside. I don't guess it would really shock me if Junior Seau retired, although he seems to have plenty of gas left in the tank, but I think this is why he stuck around to age 38, for a chance to win. And if he does finally get that win and get that ring, I don't think anybody would be surprised if he stepped out too. So I think those are the two most likely. Others that could, well, Bruschi could. I mean, you know, overcoming the stroke and spending more time with his family and such. I mean, that could happen. I suppose Rodney Harrison could, because of the injuries and all the other stuff that he's gone through. Maybe it's just time to let the body rest. Let's see. Who else? Wow, you know, on the offensive side of the football, I'm not so sure anybody does. I'd say those would be the most likely ones. Free agents or draft picks that you like to replace them? No, not right off hand. I know there's still a couple of linebackers that are out there available via free agency. That, you know, the Patriots, I'm sure, will take a look at, but I'm sure they'll have to weigh their value against what they might be able to get in the draft, and knowing that there is going to be an almost immediate need to get younger defensively, especially in the linebacking core, I'd be a little surprised if the Patriots made a free agent move in that regard. Just a little surprised. Not totally, but a little. Because I really think they want to make it certain that they've got some room to grow with somebody in the linebacking corps, somebody that can work their way in and learn from the veterans that choose to stick around. And Gary also says, did you guys notice that the Steelers on the 3rd and 6 at the end of the Jags game with just under 3 minutes left ran the ball? With a quarterback like Big Ben, you'd have thought they would have let him try to throw for the first down. In the same situation, don't you think Bill would have let Tom Brady throw for the first down? I know he's no Tom, but he is the Steelers' star. Yeah, I was surprised at that 3rd and 6 run as well. I totally was. And the only thing I can gather here is that Mike Tomlin thought, you know, we'll surprise him. They don't expect the run. It's 3rd and 6. It's an obvious passing down, so we'll surprise him. That's the only thing I can guess. What else would they could have been thinking? Yeah, that surprised me. Absolutely. Good email, Gary. Okay, let's go to the next one here. This one comes Doesn't say. Oh, geez. Send me your names, people. Come on. Oh, here we go. Thank you. I got to read it. It says, Michael from Birmingham. Birmingham, Alabama. First time emailer. Thank you, Michael. All right, you get it. Good job out of you. It says, I have a few observations and I want your opinion, so I'll get into my thoughts about you guys in future emails, he says. He says, but I think Maroney is a stud. He'll be a 1,500-yard back next year guaranteed. Whoa. What has he done? I would ask you, Michael, what has he done to this point in time to make you think that? He had a little over 700 yards last year as a rookie. He had a little over 800 yards this year as a sophomore. So you think he's going to be able to double what he did this year? Or combine, or next year do what he's done combined the last 2 years? Wow, don't see it. And especially if the Patriots receive any kind of consistency in bringing back some of the receivers from this year. In other words, read into that re-sign Randy Moss. Aren't you still going to want to be a pass-first offense if you have Moss and Welker to throw to? I mean, come on. Anyway, he says, I think Belichick and McDaniels will come to the conclusion that they need to run the ball more, and Maroney will get the ball 20 to 25 times a game next season. Who do you think Belichick will use the franchise tag on this time? I think it will be Samuel once again. What do you guys think? Now, I believe he's already hit the incentives in his contract where they can't use the franchise tag on him again. But that was part of his agreement to get him into camp this year, if I'm not mistaken. Says the Pats will lead the league in time of possession next season. That will in turn keep an aging defense strong. Give me your thoughts. Great show. Listen every day. Okay. Well, Michael, thank you for participating. Certainly it's appreciated. And, your thoughts are all good ones. Everybody's entitled to their own observations. I just think that in this point in time, I don't know that the Pats are going to lead the league in time of possession. They did have a high number this year. It's because they used a control offense with the passing game, not necessarily the running game. They may have an aging defense. They may have a need to keep an aging defense strong for next year. But honestly, I don't think that they keep an aging defense strong for next year by running the football. I think they make an aging defense stronger next year by infusing some youth into it. And I do really believe that they're going to look defense, and particularly linebacker, you know, within the first couple of rounds of the draft next April. I just think they have to. You know, as much as we'd love to see them take a big name with that 7 pick, again, even with the number 7 slot, you know, in the draft, don't be shocked if they trade down, because they're going to look at value. And if they don't have value for what they need based on their needs after they evaluate after the season is over, which they will be doing, then they're going to trade down and they'll go for multiple picks. And they'll trade it away and get multiple picks next year. They've made a history of doing this. So it all depends on what they think is the value overall. This one comes from Shannon, who says, did any of you see their poll for the Pats-Jags game on NFL.com, I guess? She says, over 100,000 people responded to, who do you think will win the Pats-Jags game? 55% said Jags. Bunch of haters. Poll question should have read, who do you hope wins the Pats-Jags game? Either way, that's fine. You know, it's opinion. You know, and frankly, you don't even know how, you know, accurate an opinion it is, because quite frankly, you know, you could have a bunch of Jacksonville fans sitting there repeatedly voting just to, you know, kind of skew it. It happens from time to time. It's just a sampling is all it is. Gary, I'm sorry, what was that you said? Oh, Shannon's a guy. Thank you. Sorry about that, Shannon. Appreciate that. Nick from Kauai Island, Hawaii. I'm a first-time emailer, and I've been listening to you guys for a year and a half now, and I love it. I'm a freshman at the University of Hawaii. Aloha. Hang loose. And the podcasts get me through the long walks around campus whenever you guys do something extremely funny.
Yeah, I feel really sorry for him having to walk around campus in Hawaii.
I know. And he's listening to the PFW guys? Please. I know. No kidding. Way to go, Nick. Anyway, he says, I burst out in laughter and get weird looks from people around me. Anyway, the main thing is, I have to say is thank you. The show is what made me the Patriots fan I am today. And he says, Fred, send the guys to the Pro Bowl. Maybe they can give me a tour of Aloha Stadium. He says, because I live in Hawaii, I didn't just jump on the Patriots bandwagon. I didn't get into football until 2002, and I can even remember rooting for the Rams in the Super Bowl. Then I got into football a lot, and I decided to go with the team of the state I was born in. Oh, good. So we got a Mass native, but he's going to the University of Hawaii. Wow. Oh, aren't you special? Way to go, Nick. Thanks for sending the email, buddy. Dave in Abingdon, Virginia says, John, like the show. Sorry I couldn't listen yesterday. I know. Download the podcast. Yeah. I mean, you haven't heard John Hanna tell you to download the podcast?
This is John Hanna, Patriot Hall of Famer. Download the podcast now.
You have to do what the man tells you to do, okay? I mean, let's face it. He is John Hanna, right? Anyway, Dave says, 38-14, Patriots will win. Yes, I am that confident in a win. I look for the D-line to show their stuff in this game. All right, that's fair. That's fair. Some of you, I'm certainly appreciative of the fact that you feel that strongly about your team. He says, oh, look at this. P.S. He says, also, do you ever get to go into the stadium area?
I wonder that, too.
When was the last time I was there at the stadium, Gary? I'd have forgotten now.
The last home game for the Patriots, maybe?
Yeah, I think you're right.
23rd of December?
Yeah, so it's been a couple of weeks since I've actually been to the stadium. Dave, let me explain, you know, because I'm sure that you've caught the show from time to time, but once we get to the end of December, part of the way that I make my living is through a lot of college basketball work. I'm the voice of the Providence Friars in the Big East, and I do also a lot of TV work in the Big East, so I do a lot of traveling. And because I've got that, and because I also do some work for a charity in Rhode Island, it's called A Wish Come True, which grants wishes to kids who have life-threatening illnesses. By the way, you can access the website, awish.org. I'll give it to you so you can go visit it and see a little bit about what we do there. It means that I just can't be everywhere every time with a lot of different responsibilities. So as the season progresses, my responsibilities grow in other areas because, you know, I'm an independent contractor and part of who I work for is the Patriots. So a few years ago, a little over two years ago, I decided to make it easy on myself or easier. Because I do a lot of freelance work for ESPN Radio as well. And I installed a studio line in my home. And I have the broadcast equipment. And I'm down here in the basement of my home where my son has his game room. And I have my satellite television. I have my computer. And I have a lot of other things down here, books and guides and all that stuff. And so it's a nice little, you know, sports haven, if you will. My wife completely stays out of here. She doesn't like it. She doesn't even touch it. So this is my son and myself's, this is our domain down here below the surface. And when it came time to, you know, trying to make sure that everybody was happy with, you know, the demands that are required, I just said, hey, from time to time, it would be all right if we hook up with my studio line here at home. And Gary has been kind enough, and Jason, and Mini Gary, and all the guys that run the controls of Patriots.com radio, they said, sure. You know, as long as we get it on the air, right? That's the bottom line. So that's why I've been more and more, you know, here at home in my studio, just because of the other demands that I have. A couple of times I've had to go by telephone, which I don't like doing. It doesn't sound very good. I understand that. But because I'm on the road and I've got other demands there, you know, we try to make everybody happy if we possibly can. So, yes, to answer your question, I do get into the stadium. I just haven't been there in a couple of weeks, so I know it seems like it's been forever. I will be there at the game on Saturday, yes, after a basketball game Saturday afternoon. And then, provided the Patriots win, I hope to be right back in Foxborough at the Gillette Stadium Studios next week. How's that? Does that work for you? Okay, very good. All right, so we'll get back to the emails in a couple of moments. Right now, though, Michael Felger from 890 ESPN in Boston, the Boston Herald, kind enough to give us a couple of minutes while he's out in amongst his trails, because you got a million things going on, right, Mike?
1 million.
Exactly. One
it's painful.
Million.
Well,
it's brutal. Yeah, you try to do as much as you can do. What's that?
I just think it's brutal.
Obviously, this time of year, it's definitely brutal. What are your thoughts initially then on the matchup? And when I spoke with the Jaguars yesterday, they basically broke it down to one thing and one thing only on Saturday, whether or not the Jaguars can run the football. If they can, they stay in the game. If they can't, it's game over. Does it break down that easy for you?
No, I disagree with all of it. I think it's about the Patriots, Rook. If the Patriots, let me ask you this. If the Patriots come out on Saturday night and play against the Jaguars the way they played against the Ravens, could they lose the game?
Sure.
Of course. And they could lose a million different ways. No one. I mean, everyone is telling me this, Rook. Everyone. That the Jaguars have to run the ball, and if David Garrard, if it's up to him to throw the ball, it's game over. Well, they told me the exact same thing about Kyle Bowler. and he nearly beat the Patriots with the help of Willis McGahee. Mm-hmm. But they said the exact same thing about A.J. Feely, and he just about beat the Patriots. David Garrard is good enough. If the Patriots don't play well on defense, David Garrard is good enough. The Jaguars are good enough. It's less to me about the Jaguars than it is about the Patriots. Now, I fully expect, John, that the Patriots are going to play better, mm-hmm. that they're going to be rested and fresh and ready to roll in the playoffs, and, you know, once again, announce their presence with authority.
Right.
But if they don't, if they play the way they did in those bowl games, the Jaguars can win, and they can win in a million different ways because they're good enough across the board.
Okay. I think that's fair. I think that's fair, and I understand that simply based on track record already at this point in time. Let me ask you this. I'd made the statement in yesterday's program that I really thought that the key time in this game may be in the first quarter. You could even go to the coin flip because both teams desperately want to set pace. They want to set tempo. They want to get ahead. The Jacksonville Jaguars, they want to start grinding out the clock. The Patriots want to jump on them from the start to make them fight from behind. Would you agree or disagree with the first quarter being very important here?
Oh, I agree. I was just talking to Matt Light about this, too. I asked him the number one key to the game for him. What's up on his big board? And they say fast start. And, you know, Matt doesn't want to go any further than that, but I think the truth behind that is the thing that you're saying. You know, if the Jags can be balanced, right, if they can run to set up the pass, then they got a shot to move the ball against the Patriots. They do, because let's face it, the Patriots' run defense is not great. It's okay. It's not great, though. And they've, in the past, you know, when you've got two threats, in the past they've shown that they've been vulnerable, just like everybody else. But if the Jaguars do get behind multiple scores early, John, and they do have to come out of their running game, then obviously I think the thing is in the Patriots' favor. I think Garrard has got a shot as long as the Jags can stay balanced. But if he's going from behind, it is a different story. And I think it would have been a different story for Feely. It would have been a different story for Kyle Bowler. The key in those games is that I think the Eagles and Ravens may even have been leading after a quarter or leading at the half, where it was close. You know, those games were close all the way through.
Right.
The Pats were trailing in Baltimore late. I mean, so that's what gave those quarterbacks a shot, because they had running games and they, you know, the Pats had to play it straight up. If the Jaguars are down early and it is Garrard throwing 40 times a game, then I would tend to agree with everybody around here. Could very easily be a blowout.
Sure. Mike Felger again from 890 ESPN of the Boston Herald here with us inside Patriots Playbook. The tempo of this game, is certainly while it is important, I wonder also, as you kind of like look at the individual matchups here, that the Patriots defensively trying to play against the Jacksonville offense in addition to the run, would you be at all surprised, because so much of the emphasis has been on whether or not Jacksonville can run the ball. Would you be at all surprised to see Jacksonville, because Garrard has been very accurate, one of four quarterbacks in the NFL this year with a 100 quarterback rating or higher, would you be at all surprised to see them open up and wing it?
No. Hold on. Okay, let me two-fold answer. One is, I would be surprised because that's not Jack Del Rio's M.O. Jack Del Rio does what he does, and he does it well. He's one of those mm-hmm. coaches. Mm-hmm. He's not a game plan week-to-week sort of guy. The Jaguars are what they are, and they sort of make teams beat what they do well. So. Mm-hmm. That would go against his modus operandi. Mm-hmm. If I were the coach of the Jaguars, hell yes, that's what I'd do.
Yeah.
And I don't care if I had a high school kid at quarterback. I don't care if it was you and me, Rook, at receiver. The Patriots, I think, are vulnerable in the secondary. You get away from Asante Samuel, I think you can throw on most everybody out there. And I would just try and make Ellis Hopps cover my guys. And I would pick on him, and I'd throw the ball. I would. Now, will they? I don't know. But I don't care what kind of team I am. If I'm facing the Patriots, that's what I do. I spread it out, and I try and put pressure on that Pats defense. I try and put pressure on that Patriots offense to be perfect and score every possession.
Right. What I mentioned earlier about the pressure in this game, and obviously at the start of the game, because the whole 16-0 thing, it's got to be on the Patriots' sideline, and that if the Patriots can get off to a fast start, then I think you can see that pressure go from one side of the field to the other. That being said, the guys all season seem to have given the indication that, you know, no, there's no pressure. We go week to week. We do a good job of deflecting whatever there might be. Do you buy that, or do you think there is a lot of pressure on this team this week?
Well, that's another thing I kept poking and poking and poking with this week when I was down there, and that is, what does 16-0 mean Saturday night? And they all say, nothing, you start over in the postseason, everyone's 0-0, et cetera. But, John, I think we all agree that being 16-0 in the regular season makes that playoff loss even more devastating. because you're really knocking on the door of history. And that's pressure. It's got to be there. It's going to make that loss so much worse. And not that these guys think in terms of, hey, we're going to lose. What's it going to feel like if we lose? I know they don't go to bed thinking that. I just don't know how that's not a part of the equation somewhere. It's got to be. A lot of pressure.
Yeah. I have to think that these guys probably handle pressure about as well as anybody. I mean, look at the offensive drives they've had to win games, and look at how they've come back from, you know, the two games that they probably should have lost during this regular season. So they do handle it well. And there's every reason to believe that they will continue to handle it.
John, two separate things. I agree with what you said. If any team's equipped to handle that pressure, it's the Patriots. Just don't tell me it's not there.
That's right. I think that's a good point. If they can handle it again, then you give them all the credit in the world. If they can't, well, frankly, they're human. You know?
Right? I mean, we're going to get, and we will. We will get pissed off if they don't go 19-0. But how absurd is that?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's absurd. Totally absurd. But it is true. That's who we are. That's what we do. You know?
Yep.
We deal in the circus of absurdity every season in the NFL, especially around here in New England. Hey, Mike, thanks for a little time this afternoon. I know you're busy. I appreciate it. We'll see you around the stadium on Saturday.
John, look forward to listening to you Saturday night on the stadium.
You got it. Thanks, bud.
Bye.
You got it. See you. Mike Felger again, 890 ESPN and the Boston Herald. He's got that report card that he does in the Patriots every week after the course of their games. And obviously does his Patriots Friday programming right here on Patriots.com radio for you. And we'll have that for you tomorrow about the same time. All right, let's get back to some emails because some of you have been very good to send your thoughts in after I castigated you for not doing that. Yes, you listened. So thank you for sending them. Here we go. Let's get back into it. Andy in Vermont says, I figure there will be a few butterflies, but I also expect this team to be fired up. After all, the championship is the goal, not 16-0. To me, that was just the appetizer before the dinner. There are some hungry players on this team, Moss, Seau, Welker. They all want the ring. And no, the regular season means nothing now. It's never easy. Playoffs or not, it's the NFL. Go Pats. Andy, that's a good email. Good email. You hit the nail on the head. There are just enough hungry players on this team. Guys that came to New England for one reason, because they knew they would have, in their estimation, their best chance to be a champion. That's why Randy Moss came here and took less money. That's why Junior Seau stuck around an extra year after breaking his arm a year ago. That's why he came last year. Because they want the ring. They want a chance to win it. Regular season doesn't mean anything. So you have just enough overt hunger out on the field from some very key players to make sure that there is no complacency going on. It's a good mix. It's a good mix, and I think you'll continue to see that. I think you'll continue to see the Patriots operate in this form and fashion. Why wouldn't you? It's worked so far, hasn't it? All right, Scott in Washington, D.C., one of our good email friends, he says, John, for some reason this game against the Jaguars feels to me to be a bit like the last game against the Jets without the weather. All season, the thinking was we'd hang 60 on the Jets in our second meeting, but in the week leading up to the game, it became increasingly clear that it would be more evenly matched. Again, that may have had something to do or had a lot to do with the weather in that game, but this matchup has a similar feel to it somehow. We beat the Jets 20-10, and I could see something similar in this game. I think the Jags may be able to move the ball a lot between the 20s, but they'll have trouble in the red zone. You know, Scott, that's a good point. Because late in the year, the Patriots were very good defensively in the red zone. And I think you realize that. May have bent a little bit between the 20s, but in the red zone, they improved dramatically over the last month to 6 weeks of the season. Scott says, on defense, I think the Jaguars will be careful about blitzing Brady, and instead they will focus on trying to limit the big play. Yeah, I'll buy that. This may be a relatively boring game, not because we blow them out, but because both teams will go back and forth in a bit of a grinded-out game, with both teams having long, time-consuming drives that keeps them, you know, the scoring down. He says, I predict a 24-13 win for the Patriots. So long as a win, I don't care how we do it. Scott, good, well thought out. Thank you for your thoughts. That's actually, believe it or not, that's right about what I'm thinking. That's right about what I'm thinking. I'm also thinking about 24-13 right about now. I think the Patriots have a shot to score a little more, but it really depends on how long the Jaguars can hold on to the football and be effective with their running game. I'm still thinking maybe a little bit more around 27-17, But 24-13 is not far off. Not far off at all. Okay, let's go next. This one comes from... oh, that was sent earlier. Okay, good. That was the one from David. That's sent again. All right, here we go. John from New Hampshire. John, aside from New England media members, have you noticed that every article on ESPN, Fox Sports, SI, etc., has picked the Jaguars to win? The Patriots aren't ready for this team. Taylor, Jones-Drew, the knockout punch for New England, and on and on. Did the rest of Patriot Nation forget what we did this year? I feel that the Patriots are well aware of what they're up against and are preparing for it and are prepared for it. This is not a team that's out there convinced of their superiority and are going to blindly stroll through the playoffs. They're going to work their asses off, and God willing, they're going to win. And when they do, I'd love to see the tabloid-quality sports writers admit that they were wrong. But then again, I'd have a better chance of seeing Britney Spears painted as a role model than to see sports writers admit they were wrong. No doubt. It's a good point. Good point by you, John. Yeah. You know, I've seen a little of that. I don't think there's disrespect per se, but I think, you know, see, here's the thing, John. And by the way, he predicts Patriots 34, Jaguars 17. It's a good score, John. Thank you. Honestly, I think it's really all about being a contrarian because, you know, it seems like, you know, everybody's jumped on the Patriots bandwagon. Everybody's had them basically at the top of their quote-unquote power rankings for whatever that's worth. And so the only way that you stand out in a crowd and the only way that you get people to read you and the only way that you get people interested in you is to be the contrarian. And how do you be the contrarian in this instance? You do it because you pick the other guys. Like the whole Jeremy Green thing on ESPN.com and some of the other writers, as you mentioned, Fox, SI, they're all there. You know, if they're picking against the Patriots, it's because they just want to be different. And you know what? You're not going to really remember that they picked against the Patriots. You're not going to remember it. I mean, 6 weeks from now, are you going to remember that? Nah, you're not going to remember that. And they're banking on the fact that you're not going to remember that. And you don't read those guys for their quote-unquote expertise anyway, do you? You read them for their opinions. See, we like to think here, we give you expertise plus opinion. That's what we like to think here. But how many football games do those guys really get out and see? Some of them travel. You know, I could tell you, you know, that Tom Curran, who obviously has written for a couple of papers here in New England, covered the Patriots for a number of years and now writes for NBCSports.com, and we've had him on this program before in the past. And I can tell you that Tom goes out and covers games every week, so he's seen teams play. And so then, you know, Mike Felger, he goes out. He watches the Patriots every week. We see teams. Some of these guys who, you know, write for some of these publications, frankly, I don't think they get out to see football every week. Now, they may watch football on television. Maybe they do their diligence, and maybe they watch three or four different games throughout the course of a weekend. That's possible. Certainly, they probably all watch ESPN and their wrap-up shows, you know, so they can get some of the highlights. I hope they do. But when I say watch a team play, I'm talking about also, you know, going to practice and talking to players and listening to coaches and being around and covering it. And it's just, it's impossible for you to do that with more than maybe a couple of teams. It's impossible. Ask a guy like John Clayton at ESPN. You know, they call him the professor there. And John is one of the most respected football guys that I know. He's respected by players and certainly front office people around the league. Because why? Because he goes out and covers these guys. He goes and sees teams play and practice. And he's on the phone. Chris Mortensen at ESPN is the same way. And I'm picking ESPN just because I know these guys. I'm sure that there are guys at Fox that do that as well. And I'm sure there may be a guy or two at SI who do that as well. But without naming names and accusing here, I'm sure that there are some writers who are doing it again to be contrarians and to get the opinions out there and to make you read what they're writing just because they get under your skin. Gary in Amherst, Mass. Says, Pats win 28-17. Jags will have some success running and keeping the ball away from the offense, but the Jags are too beat up on defense to hold back the Pats when they have the ball. Even if they are successful in the run game, Jags won't be able to keep up with the Pats. Just takes too long to put together a scoring drive on the ground against the Patriots. Only takes four possessions to get to 28. And I don't think the Jags will be able to match it. Patriots offense is just too explosive for the Jaguars. Gary, that's pretty sound reasoning, to be quite honest with you. It's a good job out of you. It says 28-17. That's pretty close to what I said. I think I said 27-17, right? So, yeah, I'd say that's a good and good sound reasoning with it. Only takes four shots to get to 28, you know, out of however many you have during the course of the game, 8 to 10, whatever, if you're lucky. especially if you're trying to wing the ball up the field. And you're right. Sometimes it just takes too much time when you're running the football primarily. Good sound reasoning there. All right, next email here coming to the inbox comes from, let's see, who's this from? Jack, who says, looks like everyone just assumes that the Jags are a stronger team and will win. Well, if you live outside of Boston anyway. Jack says, John, who would you match up? You know they're going to throw at Hobbs because he has been beatable. What would you do to adjust? He says, I'd like to see Rodney back there stalking Taylor. I'd like to see James Sanders have a monster game and keep Jones-Drew contained. I think the old men like Bruschi and Sale and Vrabel will show their true colors and get to the quarterback. Let's take this one first before I read the rest of your emails. Well, yeah, I think, you know, in fact, the Providence Journal actually had a nice story. If you go to projo.com, you'll see what, I think it was Robert Lee was the reporter that wrote a story on the very thing about Ellis Hobbs being somewhat beatable at one of the corners, and that Ellis and the Patriots believe that the numbers are somewhat misadjusted simply because, you know, or at least that the impression is that Hobbs did not have a very good season. And yet, if you look at the numbers from the team perspective, they feel like he's more than held his fair share simply because teams are throwing away from Samuel, so he's actually getting more opportunities to defend. I believe the number was in the story, if I'm not mistaken, the number was there were 44 defensive backs in the NFL who gave up more touchdowns than Ellis Hobbs did. I think that was the number that I saw today. So that tells you that, you know, he really hasn't been beaten, at least the impression is leaving it, that he hasn't been beaten as badly as people think he might have been. Although, hey, there's no doubt, as Felger just told us, there's no doubt that if you're the Jaguars, yeah, you should throw at him. What are you going to do? You're going to throw at Samuel? You know, you're playing with fire, Scarecrow, on that one. Sure you're going to throw at him. I would say that, yeah, I'd say that if you know it's a passing down, you're definitely going to get your nickel package in there. I'd give him different looks. I'd throw, you know, linebackers certainly back into coverage. I'd certainly take a shot at, different defensive fronts. I mean, but, you know, the first and foremost, you have to be aware that Jacksonville is going to try to smash you with a football. So you really can't afford to be too variable defensively. Because if you get caught in one of those odd defensive fronts, and they're going to come with a straight power up the middle, you may not touch Jones-Drew. You may not touch him. Jack also says, let's see here. And Logan Mankins and Matt Light need to be the monsters that they can be. Maddie, unleash the leg whip, he says. All right, Jack, thank you for the email. Here we go. This one comes from Stan. Stan says, frankly, I don't see where analysts are saying that the Jags have what it takes to make a game of this. True, they can run the ball and likely will be able to gain yards on the ground. Keeping Brady off of the field may seem like a good plan, but if that is it, then they are missing some key pieces to the puzzle. If those long, drawn-out drives do not end in six every time, then they're just going to serve as a self-destruct mechanism for the Jags. I don't care how long the drive is, you can still only get a maximum of 7 points out of that drive, and then you have to give Brady the ball. Pats have far and away the best scoring percentage on drives of 80 yards or more. They can and will score on you. They can score quickly or with long drives. Without their two big guys up front, how do they plan to stop our offense? Talking about the Jaguars' defense, which we spoke about some of their misses up front earlier in the program today. Says they were killed last week when they were blitzed, and without those big guys, Brady will likely have all day to throw. All our defense needs to do is come up with a few key stops or just limit them to field goals. So long-range drives are fine, but if they don't end in six, and if they can't stop our offense, then the game's basically over. Okay, Stan, you know, it's good reasoning. Let's wrap up emails here with this. This one comes from Dave, who says, thank you, John, for what you do. My daughter went on her Make-A-Wish trip just before she passed. Another great organization. Dave, thank you for the kind note. I'm very sorry for your loss. I feel very strongly, and I don't want to get off on a tangent here, but I feel very strongly about some of the things that I do. And the Wish Come True group in Rhode Island is a local charity. The big difference between a Wish Come True and Make-A-Wish, they do the same kinds of things. But A Wish Come True is a local organization, locally based. It doesn't have a national foundation to it like Make-A-Wish does. The big difference between the two organizations is that every dollar that you spend, you know is going to be spent on a child from Rhode Island or southeastern Massachusetts. Make-A-Wish being a very large and still a very good organization, but being a very large corporate entity, the money that's raised locally gets sent to corporate. They get their cut, advertising, salaries, all that stuff that's going to be taken out of it before it gets sent back to the local chapter. So a higher percentage of the dollar that you spend for the charity is it a wish come true. That's the biggest thing, because we've got basically five part-time employees. Part-time employees at a wish come true. We're all part-timers. So that, you know, cuts the overhead, makes more of the money go to the wishes that we grant to the children, which is the big difference. So, you know, we hope that if you're, you know, in the local area, or even if you're not, but you're thinking of giving, the case would be that we would hope that you would choose a wish come true, because you know you're going to get more bang for your buck. More of your dollar is going to the kids who live here. And that's the biggest difference that we have. So thank you, Dave, for that note. God bless you guys. And I understand some of what you're going through. So we appreciate your interest. And I'm, you know, very happy to do what I do. What do we have left? What do we have left to get into, Gary? What did we said we were going to? Patriots press. Whose press conference? Thank you very much. Okay. So let's start with Junior Seau, shall we? We've got Junior Seau and Bill Belichick still to get to for you today. So let's start it off with Junior Seau as he met with members of the Patriots media, and he's got some poignant things and some specific things to talk about in terms of matching up with the Jacksonville Jaguars on Saturday.
Junior, I was just talking to Ty. How much does it help you guys in the linebacker core to have that kind of front line occupying blocks and sort of letting you guys make some plays back there?
Well, they're the best insurance policy I've ever had. You know, you can't say enough about those guys. You know, they do a great job. I know how, you know, the running backs feel when the holes are wide open and we could go downhill and shoot it. And, you know, being protected by those guys, every play is the key.
Bill mentioned to you there have been times where he's showed the linebackers some of those clips from the Giants teams that you're smiling at. I mean, are those guys like, is that motivation at all for you guys? You guys just kind of shrug it off like, all right.
Well, the Giants are the Giants. I mean, you know, back in the day, if you want to backtrack, those guys were, you know, obviously Hall of Famers and guys that are integral parts of, you know, this game. And we would like to, you know, carry ourselves in that manner whenever we can. But those are lofty goals.
Does that mean trying to be as nasty as those guys on the field?
Just trying to win a game. Just trying to win a game. It all works together.
Realizing how hard it is to get to the playoffs, how much do you relish the opportunity like this Saturday to get one step closer to that ultimate prize, and these opportunities don't come up all the time for a lot of football teams?
Well, yeah, obviously we've been spoiled here in New England. And in terms of, you know, being in a postseason, this is probably going to be my first postseason in the last 13 years. It's different for everyone, but, you know, we are working one day at a time, as you guys heard many times before. That's the only way we know how to work through it. You know, we don't want to look too far ahead, and complacency is not our friend, so we're not even going to deal with that.
Prepare any differently at all if you lose, you're done versus in the regular season. If you lost, you could always bounce back the next week. Is there any different preparation when everything is on the line for one game?
Well, the pressure is on. You know, you're not guaranteed anything. You know, the only thing we're guaranteed is one day after the other. And we have a game on Saturday. We happen to do well there, and then we can afford ourselves employment the week after that. That's about it. Other than that, it's now a business, and it's no longer a game. It's a business, and we're fighting for employment.
Ellis was talking the other day about there were times that the team wasn't as maybe tough or physical as he'd like, as he should be. Have there been a few glitches here and there that you really notice and like to see corrected, especially against a physical team like Jacksonville?
You're going to have to ask Ellis. there's a lot of things we can do better, you know, and that's what we're trying to do today and hopefully tomorrow. But every day brings on a different challenge, you know, and, you know, you can't pinpoint what we're going to be working on, you know, on a given day, because there's so many things that we need to work on. But hopefully by the time we get to Saturday, we can kind of tone it down to where we need to position ourselves to win. And that's all we're looking forward to.
Junior, everybody plays this game for the ring. You've been chasing that for 18 years now. That's a lot longer than most guys ever get to play. What's it like, that long quest? And did you ever dream maybe when you got that close in 94 that it would be this long together?
Well, in 94, I was, what, 23? I'm now 38. So, you know, that was a long time ago. And whenever you get into the playoffs and when you gain success early as a human being, you think it's easy. It's going to come back again. You know, it's going to come back around. But it doesn't always work that way. It doesn't always work that way. Would I have thought I would be here after 18 years? No. I would have never thought that. It just worked out the way it did, and here we are. Now we're going to have to face that.
Has that been a big part of keeping you hungry, keeping you playing, the quest for the ring, or has that been the whole thing?
I'm not here for anything else. Yeah. I'm not here for anything else. I'm not here to practice. I'm not here to go to meetings. You know, it's a great game, and I do love the game. But you will love to finish it the way you dreamt of finishing it when you were a kid. And so I knew coming here there was a chance of winning. Not to win just the Super Bowl, but just to win. And I knew that in this league, if you win consistently enough, it allows you greater things. And that's the formula that I've been going with, you know, ever since I started. And the chance of winning has led us to where we are today. That's all we have, just a chance. And hopefully, you know, at the end of the day, we can meet on this and we can talk about something else. But until then, you know, we have a job on Saturday.
When you broke your arm last year and you couldn't participate in the postseason, did you ever have any doubts that you could coax another year out of yourself? And not only that, but to play at the level you played this year?
I never doubt myself of playing a game of football. One thing I've always said to not only myself but to people around in the locker room, what have you, is that, you know, never allow the world to, you know, put barriers on you as a person or as a player or as a human being as to what you should be doing, what you've been saying at an age that you may be. And I never allowed that to happen. I believe that, you know, with good health, experience, and God-given talent, do what you want to do and do it with a positive light. And everything else will work out. It'll all pan out. That's what I believe in.
After that Super Bowl and '94 season, you once talked about sitting in the airport down in Miami and feeling like everybody was looking at you. You said you kind of felt embarrassed about that. Do you remind yourself of that? Does that keep you going, or does that try and get rid of that?
Well, you try to just forget about it. You know, going to the Super Bowl and facing the San Francisco 49ers with all the talent that they had, you know, they took it to us. And, you know, sitting in the airport, you know, what was that, 12 years ago? Or even more. I don't even want 13 years ago. I mean, it was embarrassing. As an athlete, as a professional athlete, to go in there and compete at the high level that you hope to, and to go out there and have it handed to you on national TV as the world was watching, it was embarrassing.
That's Junior Seau with members of the Patriots media earlier at Gillette Stadium. We'll wrap up today's program with Patriots head coach Bill Belichick. Let me get a couple of other predictions in here quickly. Our friend Diane in Bridgeport, Connecticut says, John, given the hype that this is a real matchup game, I've spent hours reviewing the Jags game results and then comparing the results to what the Patriots have done. More than on any other comparison this season, the Patriots outmatched the Jags on offense and defense. Thinking through different scenarios, adding the emotional content the Patriots are likely to bring, I predict Patriots 34, Jaguars 20, but would not be surprised by a final score of 48-20. Diane, thank you for putting that kind of time and effort into it. I appreciate it. Let's see. Where are we else? I think there was one other one I was going to read here very quickly. Here we go. Patriots 38, Jags 17. This comes from Mike in Portsmouth, New Hampshire. Originally, I thought that if the Pats win it all this year, that several players might retire. Bruschi, Sal, Harrison Brown. But on second thought, if they win it all, then they're still undefeated, perfect. And the legacy of the greatness of this team continues on next year. They'll only need three games to break the 21-game win streak. I wouldn't want to walk away from that, although Troy Brown will probably hang it up and his number should be retired. Well, that's an interesting thought. I guess time is going to bear that out, right? Let's see. Dagmar from Miami. Get his prediction in. Let's see what he says here. Oh, he wants me to say, he says, hello to Brian Lowe and Christina Acra. Tell them that I waited last night for the Patriots Today edition at home, and I had to go to bed without watching it. I'll tell them, Dagmar. He says, I'm becoming some kind of Patriots Today addict.
She's hot, too.
Wow. How about that? We got a Patriots Today addict. Dagmar. Okay. Small doses. Small doses is all I can tell you. He says, I do hope to see the Pats come up with the W. All right. Well, of course, I think we all kind of feel that way, right? This one says for John Rook. Oh, from Bill, who said, this is Bill in Whittier, California. Says, I wanted to comment on Ellis Hobbs and Lawrence Maroney. Like many fans and commentators, I have at times wondered out loud about the quality of play from Hobbs and Maroney based solely on what I see. I noted particularly two plays during the first half of the Giants game. Manning threw deep downfield. Hobbs was there to wrap up the receiver, but he should have done a better job of keeping the ball out of the guy's hands. A couple of days ago, a press conference, he says he thinks it was Dean Pease, where he talked about those two plays, and he made an excellent point that I think we all forget sometimes. The play that we see as fans, or as media reporters, or analysts, doesn't necessarily reflect the true nature of the play. Pease said that Hobbs should have had help on the first play, but the help wasn't there. He didn't specify, but I assume this would have been a safety on that side to force the receiver more inside, therefore giving Hobbs a better opportunity. That's absolutely the case. And in fact, I believe, if I'm not sadly mistaken, because I kind of glanced through the story this morning, Bill, that was what the story in the Providence Journal said today. It was pretty much the same thing that you're talking about here. So take a look at projo.com, and you might get a better bit of an idea of that. I thank you for all of your emails and your predictions and all sorts of good things, but it's time, frankly, right now to play some football. So hopefully we'll see about that on Saturday night, and provided the Patriots win, well, Patriots' playbook lives for another week, and we'll be talking about a potential AFC championship game at home in Foxborough next week, and we'll save that for next week. We'll wrap up this week with Patriots head coach Bill Belichick.
So how are we doing today? Winding down on our preparations here. Try to get all the situations covered, be ready to go on Saturday night.
Bill, can you just talk about the safeties a little bit in Jacksonville?
I think, you know, of course, they're new from last year. Deion Grant, is an outstanding player for it, did a good job. But, you know, Nelson is a... kid that we did a lot of work on coming out of Florida, fast, real athletic guy. Has a lot of range back there. He's made a bunch of plays for him. Giving a strong safety's name, 26. I can see him. Yeah, Sammy. Real experienced player. We played against him a lot in the past. Of course, he was at Miami and very instinctive guy. He's around the ball a lot. Reads the quarterback well. They've been very productive. It's a good secondary. Corners are good. Cousin comes in as the third corner, and both their safeties are good. They don't play a lot of 60 Bs. Only five, mainly five. Those five guys do a good job, and they've got good depth out there at corner with Starks and Aaron Glenn. So it's a good secondary. Good young players too. With Fudge just played some four in safety. It's a good group.
Hey Bill, if you were preparing for an opponent and you could only have two tapes to choose from. One tape they win, one tape they lose.
What would you pick? Depending on who the team was. I don't think that, winning and losing sometimes comes down to one play or two plays or something. You could get a lot more out of a tape that was just had more relevance to you, win or lose.
What's the hardest thing about playing left tackle, and what strengths does Light have that allow him to succeed there?
Well, probably the hardest thing at left tackle is just having to block the athletic rushers that come off that side, which is usually where the other team's best or most athletic rusher is. Maybe not their best rusher, but usually their most athletic rusher. So, left tackle's got to block a very athletic guy out there in a pass rush, and then he's got to block, big guys like Spicer, this week, or, other guys in our that we've seen in our division, you know, that in the running game that are 300-pound guys, 290, whatever they are, and block them in the running game. And so it's a combination of having to be athletic enough to block the athletic pass rushers and to be big and stout enough to hold up against the big guys in the running game or on the power rush. And so that's, you know, usually don't get a lot of help over there because most teams are right-handed and most teams put the passing strength to the right side. Not always, but, you know, generally speaking, most teams do. So it's a little more, it's pretty challenging over there in terms of blocking those athletic guys.
Is there anything particular that Matt has been able to do there during the
Well, I think, yeah, no, I think Matt's, you know, does a good job. He's not, you know, he's not the biggest guy, but he's big enough. He's not the most athletic guy, but he's athletic enough. You know, they're probably, I'd say he's in the upper echelon of both of those categories, but there are probably some left tackles that would, you know, if you went to the Indy Combine test results that would test better than him. There are some that are bigger than him, but I mean, I think he has a good combination of, you know, mental toughness, technique, size, athleticism, you know, quickness to, you know, to be competitive against a lot of different types of players out there, which he sees. And, you know, he does a good job for us in a running game. You know, he's competitive on the pass rush against power, against speed. You know, he's a good technique player. You know, he doesn't just have a lot of bad plays where he just takes a bad set or is late out of a stance or oversets the guy or, you know, those kind of things. So he's pretty consistent, and he's been consistent since, you know, he came here in 2001. I mean, he started playing left tackle for us as a rookie. So he's had a lot of consistent and good performances over there. It's a tough position to play.
What particular challenges do you expect to face from the Jaguars running backs tandem, and do you expect them to show you anything different than you've seen on the film so far?
Like, as far as what? New plays, or what are you talking about? I don't know what they're putting in, but those backs are good. Fred Taylor he's one of the best backs in the league. He's got a great combination of quickness, power, vision. He's a very good technique runner, and I think he's got exceptional vision. He finds and sees holes as well as any back we play. He's got the speed to go the distance. He's got the power to run over people, and he's got the quickness to make defenders miss in the hole. He breaks a lot of tackles. It's good in the passing game. Jones-Drew is a little different style of runner, but very effective. He's a very powerful guy for his size. Got great lower body strength, runs through a lot of tackles, has good speed. You know, can go to distance. We saw that in the kickoff return last week against Pittsburgh. Saw it against New Orleans. Saw it against Colts. Long runs, very good in pass protection. He's probably as good a pass protector as we've seen this year for his position in the running back. Plays a lot on third down. Catches the ball to the backfield, good run, runs good routes, hard to tackle when he catches it, good screen and draw guy. I mean, both those guys they're not good, they're real good. Fred Taylor's as good as anybody we've faced. He's outstanding.